listening to The Couples Guide Podcast.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Talia.
We're both licensed marriage and family therapists, and today,
like every day,
we're debunking myths and delivering truth about dating, relationships, and everything in between.
Trust us.
It's awesome.
Episode 85. Talia, let's talk about what you want to talk about today.
What would make me happiest though is if
whatever makes you happy.
But whatever makes you, I don't have needs.
Well, okay, I have needs, and my need is for your need to be fulfilled.
Okay. Well, that is good because I just want you to be happy, and I'm good. Like, I just want to do whatever you want to do.
I'm laughing way too hard to keep this going. I assume listeners know we never plan these random things because sometimes it's very obvious, but this was too funny to me. I couldn't keep a straight face. I loved it. Yes, for everyone who read what we're talking about today, people pleasing in relationships. And you already jumped in down a big one I want to talk about, needs. I'm still chuckling. Talia, what is people pleasing? What are we talking about? Because I think that's a term thrown around a lot, and in, you know, we kind of get it, but what does it actually mean, or how do we want to talk about it in today's episode?
Yes. So people pleasing as a behavior involves putting somebody else's needs above or ahead of your own needs. People pleasers are very socially adept. They're very good at reading people and reading the room and reading situations and anticipating, in quotes, what might need to be done or what they think might help be helpful on the other person's behalf. They're very high in agreeableness, the personality trait, and they're typically seen as very helpful and very nice. It's associated with the personality trait known as sociotropy, which is feeling overly concerned with others and earning their approval as a way to maintain relationships. So that is the foundation.
I did not know that term. Sociotropy. Yes. Look at me learning from Talia. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yes. Yeah. And I think like the term people pleasing gets thrown around in a negative way. And I will start off my perspective on this episode saying, yes, I am looking at that term that's not an ideal place you want to be.
Right.
But that's why I want to clarify that, because there is people pleasing comes from a positive place a lot of the times.
Yes.
I say a factor of people pleasing is very positive. I think it's always a couple different factors, which we'll get into, but it's often does come from a place of care. There is something really important in relationship when you're talking about needs to go, well, wait a second, in this moment, do I need to kind of put my needs on hold to support my partner? We want to say that's a great thing at times to do in a relationship. But people pleasing in relationship as a negative thing is when one partner is in that role and is always sacrificing their needs for their partner or for the relationship.
Typically to the point of resentment and without the person asking for that to be done.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole danger is that it's not really in response to a partner asking for support. And so resentment gets built up and then that's just toxic in a relationship.
Yes. So some of the signs and traits, I have a list in front of me. Difficulty saying no or setting boundaries, really being hyper fixated on what other people might be thinking about you, whether it's before, during, or after an interaction. Turning people down will make them think you're mean or selfish. So you have struggles with quote unquote disappointing people. You agree to things that you don't like or do things you don't want to do for the sake of being included or for the other person being happy. You struggle with low self-esteem or self-worth. You want people to like you and feel that doing things for them, with especially the people-pleasing supreme level, is without them having to ask, which is, again, like we mentioned, leading cause of resentment. Mm-hmm. Overly apologetic for things that don't warrant an apology, being very quick to, oh, I'm so sorry, oh, I'm this, oh, I'm that, either front loading a sentence with it or doing something, and the perception is, oh, I've disappointed them, so we go in quick for an apology, taking the blame even when something isn't your fault as a way to keep the peace, not having free time because you're always doing things for other people. Again, that circles back to not having boundaries or saying no, neglecting one's own needs, especially for the sake of being able to do things for others. So tamping down your own needs or not being able to identify what your own needs are, and surface level outwardly. That's why I differentiated the beginning nice versus kind. Being nice is being overly social at times and telling people what they want to hear and going with the flow. Being kind is being honest, potentially in a way, not intentionally, that would hurt the person's feelings, but you can say a truth that a person might not like hearing in a kind way, versus being nice and kind of brushing things under the rug and not seeking to upset or potentially disappoint someone. So you pretend to agree, even though you feel differently deep down, and you don't usually share that you feel differently, parentheses, to the other person. This is where you hear people vent about their relationship partner or a friendship to everybody else except the person that they're having the issue with. And they have those fantasy conversations that we often hear in the room. And then I was like this and this and this, and I'll slow down and I'm like, did you actually say that? They're like, no, but I thought it. I set it up here and I won that argument in shower.
Yeah, so shower winning.
Yeah, they're very good at tuning into what other people are feeling. They are generally very empathetic and thoughtful, but those traits might be manifesting as a way to cope with poor self-image, a lack of control of self, a lack of being in touch with one's own emotions, and also a tendency to really be an overachiever and a people pleaser combo. There's different kinds of people pleasing that we'll go into also, but if any of those traits sound like you or resonate, then please continue to listen. And if you know somebody that you're like, oh, that's what they are, also please continue to listen, because we hope to help you through that a little bit in this episode and what it looks like in relationships.
Yeah. And the place that I would, that naturally comes to mind to start, that you're already addressing in some of these traits of people pleasing, is the self-worth, self-esteem part. Because it tends to be such a, I'm trying to think, like, I don't think I've ever not seen that be a major factor in people pleasing, where it's somehow related to self-worth, self-identity, self-confidence, that this way of relating to the world by of sacrificing one's own needs for others is all out of either not knowing ourselves very well, so that's our self-identity, not really getting like who we are and what's right for us,
right?
Or not having confidence that we believe in ourselves, that we feel good about ourselves, that we're really worthy and deserve for our needs to be met.
And this can also stem from the childhood can also have a large impact and role in the formation of this behavior, if that is the role that you were either assigned, self-assigned or assigned by family to play in your family or play in the upbringing environment that you were in, that is going to feel more ingrained. It will feel more like egocentric and congruent to be a people pleaser if it was also environmentally modeled for you, if you had one or both parents who did this. Separate from, but also in addition to, sometimes that self-esteem piece, this may be your family's norm. So you don't see it as something negative because it's a norm. And then you go out in the world and that's the way you relate to other people. And then you can also feel taken advantage of, right? I think generosity in a family is far different than people pleasing in a family. So if you have a family that's very generous and very kind, even when you go out in the world and you do that, not everybody's going to respond the same way. Some people might take advantage of it. And then if it is that piece of people pleasing, typically that is taken advantage of or taken for granted. And many of the people pleasers I've worked with are extremely frustrated and disdainful towards their partner or the recipient of the pleasing. How could you not know all I've sacrificed for you? Look at all I've done for you. Why don't you appreciate this? Why aren't you doing this back, right? There's a lot that they're not saying because it's being masked by the people pleasing that's actually fueling sometimes more of the people pleasing. Well, maybe if I do it enough, they'll notice. Well, maybe if I do it to this, then I'll get an appreciation. And they're very angry and disdainful. The people that they are pleasing don't see how hurtful it was once they realize it. And I tell them, why would they stop you if they are benefiting from it, and either consciously or subconsciously, they know you like doing it too, for whatever reason, why would the person stop availing themselves of / taking advantage of all the things you're doing for them that they don't even have to ask?
Yeah. And also not giving people too much credit. Like, I think a lot of times it's like, they just really don't know, because part
Many
of it
is like, that's just how people are. Cool. Like, I'll accept it.
That's how it is. Or that's how I met you, my partner. And if you bring this people pleasing trait to your relationship, especially because it's very common, if that's a part of someone's personality trait, that early in a relationship, they're going to people please, because, well, I want to dive into like what it means when you care about someone and people pleasing. Yeah, but when you're really interested in meeting someone, you're excited, like, people pleasing is even easier because, oh, this person I care so much about, I'm so excited, I'm attracted, I want to do these nice, wonderful, caring things.
Right.
Well, if your partner learned that that's you,
right,
and you don't share with them that actually that's a big sacrifice, then there's two people are buying into the obliviousness of the sacrifice need. Both partners contribute, and it's because you're setting norms and establishing. And I think, just to be clear, like, so imagine a relationship where one partner always cooks the meals.
Sure.
And that was that people pleasing partner's, wow, the alliteration on this episode is going to be top notch. But that people pleaser, you know, that was their way of showing that care and doing it. And maybe really enjoyed it at the beginning, because that is how they showed love and care. Like, I'm going to cook this dinner for us, and this is great, and we're into it. And the other partner's like, oh my gosh, my partner loves to cook. They're great at cooking. It's something that works for us. We have these amazing dinners together. What a wonderful relationship we're in. We're both really happy. But then the people-pleasing partner over time goes, well, but how, internally thinks, well, how come they never cook for me? How come they never like prepare something or plan something for me? And instead of sharing that and talking about it, can keep it in, and then that resentment builds. Mm-hmm. And then when it finally comes out, like literally years down the road, then the partner who wasn't cooking dinner is like, what? I didn't realize that was happening. Mm-hmm. Or oftentimes another like dynamic with people pleasing, if there isn't a lot of experience with sharing those needs or what they want, then it kind of comes out, maybe I hinted at, it comes out as the person going, oh, do you want to maybe cook dinner Friday night? And then the partner who, because the norms, had no idea that that was really a thing, goes like, no, I don't. I love when you cook. You're great. Maybe even thinking, I know how much you love cooking. I wouldn't want to take that from you. No. Yes. But then the people pleaser is like, ugh. You know, that was my big bid for to change this dynamic, and we missed it. And then it's like an explosion of resentment, an explosion of whoa. And it's often, it can be years down the road too far gone to even get there. And then the person who like was having their dinner cooked for them was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
Can we repair this? But then
what I'm hearing is there's going to be no more dinner being So just to be clear, emotions. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Real food though. All right. It's mine. Yeah.
But how do I eat after 5 p.m.?
Hello, Domino's.
No, but really, it could be just, I mean, look, in this example, maybe dinner wasn't a great one, because like, it is kind of like oblivious of someone to be like, what? Well, and that kind of thing. But at the same time, I want to honor, like, I also hear with couples, the other side, like, I really, you know, partners really didn't know. They're like, where did this come from? I'm hearing finally it's coming out that there's been years of resentment built, when it's like, I thought I learned this thing a couple weeks ago that wasn't working, and I'm still trying to wrap my brain around how to change my life. Or I'm still just kind of in protection mode going, whoa, what happened? I'm a horrible human suddenly. I thought we were on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, I don't want to overdefend the person who gets sidelined, is overwhelmed and didn't know things. I'm using this to highlight how dangerous this can be in relationships, how couples can, in a sense, like collaboratively, negatively put themselves in these positions.
Yes.
That's my point. I guess I should stop talking now.
No, I have two notes on that.
Yeah.
Part of it. So I think I've already mentioned this, but I'm writing a book. So part of this is from my book. You get a sneak peek preview.
Woohoo!
And the other part is like writing articles I've done. So when the people pleasing pattern is happening in your relationship, the frustration and the resentment you feel from your partner not utilizing what you provided them or appreciating what you did for them is typically directly proportional to how much sacrifice, compromise, and neglect of one's own needs that it took you to provide said thing. So resources can be time, energy, effort, money, et cetera. It's also related if you are doing that something for your partner by your own volition. Like, I'm choosing to do this. They never asked and I'm okay with that. And that's just something nice that I'm doing, right? Like we were talking about being thoughtful of your partner and meeting their needs that you've seen, right? Oh, every Thursday, they seem to be really stressed when they get home from work. I have an extra 15 minutes, happy to do the dishes, right? That's not people pleasing. That's anticipating your partner's needs. And if it puts them in a better mood or you have a conversation about it, that's like an agreement. That's separate from what I'm talking about.
Well, and let me jump in real quick just to say, and that just goes to show the fine line of like people pleasing versus being a considerate partner.
Correct.
Because you could look at like that and an exact same behavior or thought on one side of the line really is just like, hey, I'm being a thoughtful partner. And on another side, it's being people pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you have to look at like the pattern, how frequently mm-hmm. does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And then also how much it is being sacrificed by being a thoughtful partner. How much internally is being sacrificed
correct.
To do that thing? So mm-hmm. I love that example, but I just want to jump yeah. in and highlight that line that can get really, really close on these different places.
Yes. So I ask the question to my clients and people, how many of you project your own needs and wants onto another person as a way of modeling for them what you really want them to do? We often project onto others what we want and need ourselves, and that either insults the person or they don't need it and therefore they don't appreciate it. This is basically an instinct. So each time you go to do something for another person or your partner, ask yourself, what is the purpose of me doing this? Was this asked of me? And was this explicitly agreed upon? If yes, then you could reasonably say appreciation can be given freely or asked for. If you have a reminder, hey, I did this. Just, oh, thanks so much. Right. That's the feedback loop. And if not, that's typically people pleasing. And you can't reasonably say that appreciation would be given freely or be seen as something that the other person needs, right? They might just, you did it and they didn't acknowledge it. And you're sitting there fuming because they didn't notice the thing that they never asked you to do in the first place, but you did it as a way to seek approval and be important.
Yeah.
So that's also why it's so hurtful to go unacknowledged as a people pleaser, because what we've equated that being seen or acknowledged means equals I'm safe, I am loved, I belong. And that is a indirect way of trying to seek reassurance rather than more direct ways, which we'll talk about in a moment. So this harkens back to the problem of expecting or noticing appreciation for something the other person never asked for. However, we decided on their behalf that they needed it, would benefit from it, or we would benefit from giving it to them. So that's one part. And then I have the quote from the book, if you want me to read how I've identified this pattern.
I was going to jump in because I haven't thought about it, but yeah, I'd love to hear that quote.
So if you don't know how to ask for your needs to be met, there's a good chance this pattern started for you in childhood. During childhood, if your parents don't model to you that it is acceptable to have needs, or they create an environment where you begin to believe your needs matter less than the needs of others, you may find yourself struggling to break out of that pattern in adulthood. In either case, it is likely that you are also not taught how to effectively ask for what you need in a way that yields a result. We instead learn very ineffective ways of asking that exist on a continuum that starts at hinting at whatever you want and escalates all the way to being given an ultimatum that is typically a shock for the other partner because they are blind or not aware along the way of what is happening with this pattern. And I hinted at you 100 times. I don't be direct, right? And if I've been direct 100 times, it wouldn't get to that point because I would have left after like 2. So
yeah.
2 most common reasons that needs go unmet are what I've deemed telepathic desire and projective outsourcing. So telepathic desire is expecting others to read your mind, therefore not asking directly or out loud at all when it comes to your needs, and tying in what it means if somebody does something without you having to ask, and equating it to love, affection, connection, and belonging. And then projective outsourcing is either willfully neglecting to meet if you do have your own needs identified, and or outsourcing entirely your needs onto the other person, or projecting onto them what your needs are. And we've already kind of detailed in the beginning what that looks like and why we do that. So yeah, that's a sneak peek excerpt from my book.
And then one thing that I love from that excerpt is a little bit of an aside, but that I hear so often in my sessions about, well, I want my partner to do the things without me asking. I want them to meet that need without me asking. And I think that's a very common, and in a sense, like, it make appropriate longing from our partners. I want them to know me and understand me so much that they do without me asking. However, I always challenge that's the interpretation of love and care, and go like, well, actually, I really try to create in my sessions a different version of what does love look like, mm-hmm. instead of partner mind reading or being able to do things without asking. Instead, it's being able to have the safety to turn to one another to ask for the needs to be met. And then love is your partner being responsive to that need, mm-hmm. and going, oh, I hear you, I'm with you. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, just on that point that you were making in your excerpt about how this can look different. It can be like, no, being really clear, like being asking, being assertive and sharing, mm-hmm. and not letting that equal, oh, my partner doesn't love me because I had to ask for it. Mm-hmm. No, look for the response as the act of love. Look for when I did share genuinely, directly, and vulnerably, look for the love response. How did my partner fulfill that need or address it or attune to me and be there with me? Mm-hmm. A little mini shift of where to look for the love moment. Love moments.
Yes. So loving someone, as I like to say, does not give them telepathy. The majority of women that I work with come to be resentful because they're interacting with men. And this goes both ways for people pleasing. But typically, this is the pattern I see because of the archetype that society has painted women, quote unquote, should be. Mm. Right? Very, very giving, very doting, the homemaker, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Even though that's becoming evolved over the years, it mm-hmm. still is ingrained in a lot of us because it's how we were raised, maybe, or what was modeled to us potentially. So it's just in the ethers somewhere. So a majority of them are resentful and they say, well, he should have known. And I'm like, how? And then they say, well, I would have known. And then I'm like, here we go. Yeah. Here we go. Right. Yeah. No one is a mind reader, especially men. And the way that estrogen and testosterone work differently in our brain, we infer communication and are more likely to notice preferences and patterns and details based on that being what we had to survive on mm-hmm. in evolution. Right. Oh, I don't need to do this. I can't eat this berry. I can't this. When he did this, I did that. Right. We had to literally, it was life or death if we didn't notice preferences or we didn't keep everybody in our kind of community alive and safe and well. We notice things differently. And we often will go in and do something on behalf of the other person. And they might very well need it. And they don't even realize they need it till we've done it. Still worthwhile to not and continue that as a people-pleasing behavior, but rather as, hey, I think you noticed because you said thank you that I did that thing for you. Is that something you'd like me to do for you again? Or was the gratitude for a one-time thing? And yeah, is that sexy? No, not typically. It ruins the fantasy that a lot of people have that Disney and rom-coms, et cetera, 90s and, you know, early 2000s movies set up that they should just know when they're mind reading. That is scripted. They literally have a director telling them their lines. Like, if you have a director in your relationship? No. Yeah. So it's because of this that you inadvertently set yourself up to be disappointed when they fail a test they didn't even know they were taking. You expect the other person to reciprocate what you would do without telling them directly. Or maybe you've told them many times, but not in a way that they can hear or listen. It's like a dog whistle is like I'd call it. I'm like, you're saying it, but it's at dog whistle pitch and not everybody can hear that. And what happens if they respond with what they know you'd want? And it turns out you wanted something different, right? When they do meet the needs, because we are being responded to in our relationships when this people-pleasing dynamic happens. And there are often times where people are trying to show you, it's like speaking love languages, right? One's Portuguese, one's Spanish, similar, but I can't understand it. Mine might be acts of service. Yours might be physical touch. So every time you go into touch me and I'm like, ugh, this is a lot. You might feel shut down, right? And if I'm a people pleaser, I'll be like, okay, well, how do they want to be loved? I'll just love them that way. rather than teaching your partner at the same time, I think we receive love and give love differently, yeah. right? Just as an example.
And I want to dive into a little bit of that, of because people pleasers will go, oh, okay, how do you want to be loved? And spend so much time focused on their partner's needs and what works for them. It's really common for a people pleaser to not really know their needs yet, or to not be comfortable sitting with them.
You brought that up.
And I see that in a lot of different ways in my office. And a big one is when a people pleaser is also a withdrawer, i.e. when there's mm-hmm. distress in the relationship, they pull away. Because mm-hmm. both strategies, people pleasing and withdrawing, is all about, well, not all about, but an important part of it is conflict reduction. Reduction. Right. It's correct. To avoid, oh, no, I don't think bad because we're there. So I like to use that parallel to point out, like, a lot of times when we do these conflict reductions and not really know our needs, and if someone's a withdrawer, it's about first going, well, what do you need? Maybe you do want to touch, maybe you don't want to touch, in that example that made me think of this. Mm-hmm. And so just getting used to as a place to understand ourselves and shift this pattern so that it doesn't turn that really nightmare scenario we talked about is first having to get honest with yourself about, maybe I don't know how to sit with what I want and what's okay with me, and mm-hmm. talking about that first and just going, mm-hmm. I really haven't allowed myself to understand this part of me. That's mm-hmm. difficult. Can I talk about with my partner? Mm-hmm. Obviously, very useful to do with a therapist. Very good to do that on individual work to get comfortable with it. And then also in couples therapy. But you can also do that in your relationship and mm-hmm. just be like, hey, I'm thinking about this new thing. I want to sit and understand this. I don't know what that is. Maybe ask your partner for support. Hey, can you support me in this thing about me? And what yeah. a wonderful example of shifting away from anything that your partner needs into what you need for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to your point about being aware of one's own needs, that's where this pattern can kind of be like a very wide breath tornado at first, where it's like circling your life. And then it starts to get, as you get older, it gets like closer and closer. It's like, if I was never taught to have needs, or if I was never allowed to express them, if when I expressed them, they were shut down, any of those, all of the above and more, your ability to identify and identify your needs is one thing. Voice your needs is a whole other piece. And that's what this whole chapter is about, is how to identify them, how to express them in a way that actually yields you the result that you want. So it's like a three-step yeah. process. And yeah. to your point about the self-esteem, no amount of external validation or hobbies can fill the void that you feel when you don't truly accept all parts of yourself. You will not feel satisfied if you depend on an other, in quotes, partner, work, family, etc., to fulfill a need that they could never fulfill. The need to feel and know that you are inherently lovable, worthy, and adequate stems from infancy, at least in psychoanalysis, and it's the most crucial need that needs to be met. And the only relationship that will ever fill that need is the one that you have with yourself. Mm-hmm. So you really have to go in and do the internal work. You can do that while you have a relationship. This is not to say leave your relationship, do this, and get back. That's not right at all. This can be done in tandem and in coexistence with being in a relationship with your partner. You can also know more about if people pleasing comes up in the relationship for both parties, right? What are you observing? Do they say yes to everybody and not follow through? Are you last on the totem pole? And we got asked that question the other day when I did an interview on people pleasing as well. What if my partner's a people pleaser, except I'm not on their list of people that they're pleasing? How can I handle that? Right? Because just because the person's a people pleaser, simply because your partner is a people pleaser, does not mean that you are one of the people they are pleasing. Mm-hmm. And that can be very problematic in relationships as well, because the other person now has evidence. I literally have seen you do what I'm asking you to do. So I know you're humanly capable of it. You're just not doing it for me. And I can only see it so many times before I'm going to start to take it personally and go inward and develop potentially a negative sense of self. And it's like the unworthiness of the partner is almost sublimated into the unworthiness of the partner who was like, I felt fine before I dated you or was with you. Why do I feel like not as good about myself now? Because you are picking up on something that your people pleasing partner is really trying to shove down and avoid ever being seen as. Mm-hmm. But your partner feels this, right? When you task your partner with doing things that aren't theirs to do, they can feel it and they don't want to give that to you. And they also know sometimes it's not their job to help you with that. So if you are the partner who, if you are the partner who has the partner who's the people pleaser and you are not on their list, a few things to consider are, how old are you and how long have you been in your relationship? Are they in a phase of their life where they're figuring it out and they're young and they just want to say yes to everybody and they're more in that exploratory building phase? Then you can make the decision, how close do you want to be? Do you want to just date casually or once a week, or do you really want to be committed? And if you're noticing you've been together for a while and this is the pattern they've had for a while, that's where Ryan and I or any other couples therapist would step in and be able to help identify, okay, is this pattern ever helpful? Do you ever seek benefit or have a benefit from your partner being the people pleaser? Most say no, because they're like, I got signed up to all these events I didn't want to go to. My partner then tasks me with being the person who has to rescind the invitation. Like, there's a lot more that the recipient partner can also have to deal with that the people pleasing partner may not even realize, because they're so in the thick of, I want everyone to like me and I don't want to be disappointed. And so the fear when you're the recipient partner sharing, hey, could you please run it by me next time before you just automatically say yes to literally everything on our social calendar, sometimes that causes that withdrawal, shutdown, and defensiveness, because the partner looks at them and goes, oh crap, I don't want you to be mad at me or disappointed or break up. Okay, I'm so sorry, right? That's where the over-apologizing comes in. And then the conversation typically gets derailed to be nothing about the actual addressing of the behavior and everything about the emotional rescuing of the people pleaser. So that's my two cents.
And I think it's also important to acknowledge that if part of what fuels people pleasing is that insecurity and these fears about ourselves and our relationship, then when a people pleaser is in a relationship and starts to care and matter about another person, those fears and insecurities are going to amplify, because suddenly you matter. You know, I always talk about couples, how the anger and the frustration, these like bad cycles we get into, those happen because we care about the other person. The stakes are there. You don't often get into those really difficult places with some stranger on the street you don't care about. You're like, okay, whatever. That's, you know, I might be annoyed for a hot second, but I'm going to literally forget you exist in like 2 hours.
Yes.
That doesn't happen in a relationship. Right. So it's important to acknowledge that people pleasing does intensify in different ways, though, when you start to care. Because when you care, there's more insecurity and fear and risk of vulnerability. So the example you're giving about a people pleaser and their partner's not on the totem pole. Yeah. If the partner turns to the people pleaser, I don't know why I'm like starting to lose this.
There's a lot of key words.
People pleasing. Let's go. If that partner turns to the people pleaser and comes in with demands and frustrations, well, people pleaser inherently isn't okay with that conflict. They're like, no, I want to make sure my partner's okay. They weren't on the totem pole because maybe as I was close, I did feel somewhat secure. But now that that security is gone, I'm going to shut down and withdraw.
Yes.
Versus if it stays in a secure place, then it could be when the partner expresses, hey, you know, I notice you're really committing to all this stuff. What's going on? Do you really need that? If it comes from a supporting place, then actually the people pleaser can be like, oh, I'm safe with this person. That's why I don't need to put them on the totem pole, is because this is someone that I do feel confident with. I do know that I am good enough for them, whereas I don't feel good enough for these people outside the relationship. And then you can have a collaborative discussion. Then you can have an addressing the actual issue and not get stuck talking about, you know, the stupid party. And instead you're talking about your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So all that is a little muddled. But it's to point out different ways that different people can respond when you do care about each other. And when you're a people pleaser, how will that show up? Oh, shoot. One last point. That's already a lot. But in the in this people pleasing realm, when you care about someone, that can also be a dynamic where you like double down on your pleasing, and where it's like, oh, you are my, you know, we're married now. You're my partner for life. So I'm going to always be attuning to your needs. But then that's where I can see like the resentment build up And then it does break. And then all of a sudden, it can be okay for the people pleaser to be like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm actually going to say, I need this. I've been wanting this for forever. Here we go. And that's an example of how resentment breaks something and ruptures something between a relationship, because that's the people pleaser going, you know what? I'm so fed up. I don't care about you anymore.
Yeah.
I'm over it. That's the danger zone. But I just want to share that other example of how the more we care about something, the more actually internally we can be insecure and scared, because now the stakes are high. And then how does that translate into what a people-pleasing behavior will look like?
Yes. And you bring up a really good point about trying to state your needs for kind of the, not the first time, but when you start sharing more about it, you can feel uncomfortable. It can feel like you're rejecting the part of yourself that's a people pleaser. It could feel like you might be opening up to get rejected by your partner. If you don't face that fear, however, the resentment will build and build and build, typically to your partner's not awareness, right? They're just completely unaware of that happening. And then that's where we see more explosions and more ruptures and slowly falling out of love over time, because both of you are being impacted by the behavior, right? I see my partner putting everybody else first. I don't feel put first. And then my partner, look at me, how much I have to overfunction and do all these things to avoid disappointment. I'm exhausted. They might feel guilt as well for not having availability for their partner. It affects both parties.
Yeah. And and affecting both parties, the partner who is like now learning, well, wait a second, there were these needs I didn't know. First of all, probably is not even able to understand that that's what's going on in the moment if it came from a blow up or a resentment expression. But then even secondly, like, you got to keep in mind, like, so that partner hasn't had years of experience attuning to their people pleasing partner's needs or attuning learning how to do that. So expecting them to all of a sudden 180 and know how to do that without years of experience, like, whoa, that can be really, really difficult. Just like how it is hard to start attuning to ourselves about our needs if you've never done that, it can be very hard to start attuning to our partner's needs if we've never done that. So there is a mutual learning curve and a mutual stressor on the relationship for both partners.
Yes. And I have two actually of my own journal entries from when I was dating a people pleaser, and I had the pattern as well. Self-disclosure. I think it manifested differently than my partner at the time. I know it did, rather. But I think mine was out of being new to like being in my feminine and learning about that and being receptive, etc. And mixing that with having anxious attachment, right? I think those two were fueling this.
Yeah.
And I would like rearrange, like we would have plans to hang out. It wasn't just in my head. We would have plans. We'd be talking about timing. And then I'd rearrange a couple of clients. Not that I was asked. I did it out of my own volition. And then I'd be like, okay, I'm ready. And the person would be like, I'm not ready till this time. And I'm like, but I rearranged my schedule for you. Like, what the heck? Like, I remember feeling slowly more and more resentful. Mm-hmm. And then once, obviously, that was years ago, I got more in touch with myself, more aware of what these kind of patterns were like. I realized, oh, that was my people-pleasing tendency, right? Not an overall people-pleaser. I'm actually very disagreeable. If you look at my personality assessment, it's very disagreeable. I'm not likely to go with the flow unless it really doesn't matter to me. Like when I go out, I've noticed this, when I go out with friends or I'll meet up with like networking or whatever, I could pretty much eat anything. So I don't have food restrictions, et cetera. So I'll like pitch an idea for something. And if the other person's like, oh, I can't eat anything. Do you want to go here on this menu? Most of the time I'll like take a look if I can order one thing. I'm like, cool. Cause my main priority is not, if it's not food, it would be about the connection. Mm-hmm. And if that person feels more regulated or calm and will have a better time. And it really, again, is like no skin off my back. Fine. Like it's evolved now. So the two pieces of the journal entry piece, which I think we've already touched on, would be this was just me like empty chairing basically myself to the boyfriend at the time. The inconsistency and lack of replies and lack of responses to the bids for connection slowly eroded our relationship. I had decreasing desire to reach out towards the end because I learned to expect disappointment or rejection from you. Again, oftentimes due to you prioritizing something or someone else. Where is it? Where was it? Oh, there was another piece of it too. I had it. It was really good.
Oh, man.
It hurt worse that you knew quality time was both of our love languages and you not only rationed it and withheld it from me at times, I also had to watch and hear about you giving it freely and generously to others, oftentimes with little need for them to even having to ask. You need to be mindful that this will cause a relationship partner to reach out and ask that you are capable of applying that to your own relationship that you're in. And then I wrote another piece. This was like earlier than that. I made a bid for connection and asked you to spend time like on this night. Like this is me being very self-aware while the people pleasing was happening. Mm-hmm. And you let me know that it might not be like a good time for you to do that. And then when you reached out and contacted me again, I see that you went on like whatever it was, like an 18-mile bike ride, and that you did it because you quote unquote felt bad and didn't want to disappoint your sibling, but you were willing to disappoint me. Mm-hmm. So it's going back and looking at that self-awareness that really you can be in a relationship, and this is separate from marriage, but you can be in a relationship with a people pleaser and you can call out this pattern and you can see this happening, and it still does not mean the other person wants to change it. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly confident that this person is still the way that they are based on ethereal ether stories that I hear or kind of whatever I've seen on social media. And I am a much better person because of it, to not be being react or not be reactive to that behavior, because I can look at it and go, that's whoever they're dating now, that's their problem. And that's not something that I have to deal with anymore. And some people are more immune to this behavior, and some people are more activated by this behavior. If you are recovering people pleaser yourself, anxious attachment, low self-esteem, struggling to figure out who you are and have your own needs met, typically if you're younger, if this pattern is playing out in your relationship and you're trying to work through it, the other person's trying to work through it and it's still not clicking, it's best sometimes to sit down and really have an honest talk and share, look, here's how I'm feeling. If the other person who's the people pleaser isn't self-aware enough to bring it up, you can lovingly, as the recipient, share, it's just not working for me. I see this pattern. It's really causing me to view you negatively and lessen my desire to interact with you. That's not why I got into this relationship. If you choose, give them an opportunity to be aware of it and work on it. Like you said, it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And also know that it's not mean if you've given the person advanced heads up. Here's where I'm at. I don't know that I can be happily in this relationship if it continues. It's also okay if you're the person dating the people pleaser to exit from the relationship, again, doing it kindly, because you don't have to be subject to that either. Not everybody wants to heal from this pattern, and it can take a while to do so. So I just wanted to speak to that, because I've had people be like, but I don't want them to be mad at me or have a messed up view on love, or like overtaking the responsibility where it's really not theirs. It's not their job to overfunction on the behalf of their partner.
Well, that's where like someone gets kind of like wrapped into the people pleasing, because, yeah, oh, they're such a kind human. They really, you know, I don't want to hurt them. It's like, oh, well, now you're kind of doing that thing that they do. And our whole message is, yeah, don't do that. Our message is attune to the underlying needs and talk, yes, about it. And if your partner is struggling and really feels like it's on this level of people pleasing and not attuning to their needs, then that gives you some, hopefully this episode gives you some direction of what's going on there and the dangers. So you can attune to, hey, how's your self-esteem? How's your self-worth? How's your self-identity? Or, mm-hmm, okay, I know you want to, I'll go back to the cook thing. I know you want to cook dinner tonight, but how about what do you want to eat tonight? And I'll cook it. And let me support you in getting used to asking for what you want. You know, a lot of the things we're talking about, you can, you know, our listeners, you can take this and use that as a way to get underneath the tendency of people pleasing. And that's what I would hope as we start wrapping, that that's the message here.
Yeah.
Look at the underneath piece. Look at how you can shift this.
Yes. And if you find yourself continually putting yourself in relationships with people who have this tendency, it's an invitation to look inward and ask, what pattern is this reinforcing, or what belief is this reinforcing about me as a person that I'm willingly, whether it's conscious or subconscious, but it's not like it's an arranged relationship, I'm willingly partnering with somebody who's reinforcing the belief I get put second, I am not a priority, I'm not worthy of being prioritized. There's even the self-worth and self-esteem piece when we choose more consciously to partner with somebody who has those tendencies. And then the flip side is we don't know they have them because they're so social in the beginning. And then as typical, when you get to know somebody, you start to see what that really is like underneath. And you're like, oh, you say yes to everything. Yeah. And if you say yes to everything, then you're saying no to yourself or your partner, which can be frustrating and disappointing. And you're only one person. Everybody's only one human, unless somebody I know about is like a clone living inside of them.
That'd be so cool.
You can't possibly do everything for everyone. So if you notice this pattern coming up, my final note on this is be kind to yourself, give yourself grace, and be patient, and still put yourself to task and hold yourself responsible and accountable for changing this pattern, because it's not something that's really conducive to happiness internally or relationally long-term.
No, not at all. All right. I think that'll do it for the episode.
I mean, unless you want to go more, because I can totally talk about it more if that would make you happy.
Whatever makes you happy, let's do that. No, wait, actually, what would make me happy right now? Oh, it's so hard to do. I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to take this advice and attune to myself and say, I would like to wrap this episode right now.
Fine, whatever. That's totally fine. I feel so good about that. That's so good for you. I'm not going to like cry. It's fine.
That felt so different, but I liked it. I really liked it.
I love that for you.
Well, thank you everyone for listening, including to our shenanigans. If you have questions for us or topics you want to address on the podcast, just an email, ryanandtalia@thecouplesguidepodcast.com.
Yes, and tune into my Instagram @taliabombola, where I do a Q&A, hopefully typically about once or twice a week. And if you have any questions that I cannot answer in short form, I save those and we answer them in long form. And we love to hear from you, whatever is helpful for your relationships and whatever questions you have, we would love to answer.
Indeed. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Take good care.